Word of mouth.
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 Mouth.
This is Word of Mouth from NHPR. I'm Virginia Prescott. We're not too far into the new year yet, so many of the people who resolved to get more exercise in 2015 are likely still sticking it out at the gym. Not to dim hopes, but statistically, less than 10% of weight loss resolutions will last. Damon Young is an honorary fellow in philosophy at the University of Melbourne. His latest book is called How to Think About Exercise. It won't offer tips for getting perfect abs or teach you how to run a 5-minute mile, but it may just help your resolutions stick. How to Think About Exercise is part of the School of Life series, and a pleasure to have you with us, Damon. Thank you.
Thank you.
This is a philosophy book about exercise, which sounds a little bit like an oxymoron. Is that the point?
Yes, in part. In fact, I wrote the book partly because people were so surprised that I, as a philosopher, would exercise, that I'd be, you know, swinging kettlebells or indoor rock climbing or, punching on with a friend in the backyard doing karate. And I realized that there was some strange divide in people's minds, that they thought that if you were an intellectual person, a bookish person, a curious person, then for some reason you wouldn't be interested in sport or exercise or fitness, that is, that you were kind of disembodied. And I wanted to explore that a little further because I got the feeling that it was exiling some people from the commonwealth of the body.
Well, talk to me more about that divide, this kind of dualism of mind and body. How does that manifest?
Well, it's often the idea that, for example, someone who is a sports person must be an idiot. So there was a wonderful caricature played by Brad Pitt in Burn After Reading, the Coen brothers film. He's just the beautiful stereotypical jock, just kind of positive thinking, mantras and oiled muscles, but he's as dense as a bag of stones. And this trope, this kind of metaphor, permeates our culture, and it's basically the idea that there are two realms in the world. There's a realm of mind, of the soul, of spirit, of thought, and then there's a realm of bodies, flesh, carnality. And you get the sense that some people think of their bodies just as kind of machines that need to be tinkered with. So you go to the gym, you do your reps. It adds nothing to your intellectual life, your emotional life at all. It's just about kind of tuning up that body. And what happens is it's dull. It's boring. It adds nothing to their life. They leave. What I'm suggesting in the book is that there are all kinds of enhancements to the intellect and enrichments to character and the imagination that you can get through your body. So you have to kind of bring your mind and your body together mindfully.
Let's hear just a clip from that Coen brothers film. Chad is the name of the character you're describing, a sort of gum-smacking personal trainer. Let's hear it.
The quality of the intelligence dictates how high up he is,
okay. Not what we know.
I also... Do you have any water? I gotta hydrate.
I got tap water.
Are you kidding?
How do you know who he is?
Sources.
What do you mean, sources?
You got like Gatorade or anything besides like Maryland swamp water? Do you know how far this is from my...
How do you know his name?
So you're talking about integrating the thinking person and the athletic, the workout person, you know, the kind of philosopher athlete, which sounds to me kind of Greek. Is there a philosophical basis in this?
Yes, there is. What I do in the book is I go back to the Greeks, back to Socrates, for example. And he was, of course, the teacher of Plato. Plato was the teacher of Aristotle. So these are the beginnings. And interestingly, in the dialogues of one historian and general, Xenophon, we find Socrates talking about the intellectual importance of the body. And there's another theme in the Greeks too, which I talk about, and it comes out in the Iliad. There's a running race in the Iliad where Odysseus beats Ajax. Mm-hmm. He basically wins by cheating. A god comes down and helps. But to the Greeks who are watching, it doesn't matter because it's an awesome thing to see people strive and compete and win. And what I'm suggesting is that we've often lost a sense that pride through your body is a good thing. There's nothing wrong with taking pleasure in yourself. Now, that might be the pleasure of running up a hill. It might be the pleasure of rock climbing. It might be the sublime sense of swimming. But you don't have to get some kind of personal best to do this. You don't have to beat someone else. And you don't have to get an Olympian's body.
But let's go a little further with the pride, which can sometimes cross over into a kind of narcissism. At one point in the book, you advise people to look at themselves in the mirror naked and experiment with different poses. Okay, that could be self-torture for some of us, or it could be a kind of, I don't know, narcissism, couldn't it?
Yeah, that's right. First of all, what I'm doing with that mirror is to get used to the way our self-esteem, our sense of our own beauty or glory is often dependent on our ideas of others. So that if you look at yourself naked and imagine someone who is an Olympic athlete, you're going to feel bad about yourself. And then if you imagine someone who is less fit than you, who might be softer than you, you might feel better about yourself. It's showing the arbitrariness of a lot of these feelings. But the second thing is, when it comes to narcissism, yes, this is a very real danger. And there are some correlations with some power sports and weightlifting. But I'm suggesting that an interest in the way you look is not a bad thing, as long as you recognize that it's just the way you look. So I talk about the thrill that we get as humans from looking at new unities, harmonies, and forms in our bodies. It really is a thrill to watch new muscle groups coming out, the relationships, the proportions in our bodies. The problem is when we think that these muscular groups say anything else about us. They don't make us a better person. They don't make us more deserving of respect or sexual glory. They are simply a muscular development.
Pride is one of the virtues of exercise, with benefits that aren't always directly related to health. But one of the virtues you write about is a harder sell, and that is pain. You know, for those of us who do not have a god to come down and help us, isn't that why so many of us avoid working out, this fear of pain?
There's a scene in Roadhouse where Patrick Swayze is being sewn up without anesthetic.
I just can't believe you're quoting Roadhouse now.
And Swayze turns to this doctor and says, "Pain don't hurt." Now, it sounds glib and a little bit ludicrous, but in fact, he's right. There is evidence to show that the way we think about pain and the meaning of the situation changes how we feel that pain. Getting crunched in the abdomen when I'm doing martial arts and getting crunched when I trip over my son's Lego and fall on a couch, both of which have happened, feel the same. It's the same impact on my body. In the case of tripping over and hitting my side, I'm furious, I'm angry, I'm ranting, "You need to clean up your Lego." When it comes to martial arts, it's all just part of the fight. In fact, there's something bracing and invigorating about that very same strike. I'm not angry at my friend for punching me. I'm not saying that exercise won't hurt. It will hurt. What I'm suggesting is that when it's part of a meaningful activity that we are committed to, pain is less of a problem, and we may, in fact, welcome that pain as a sign that we are striving.
Because you are talking about integrating mind and body, yeah? And a lot of people, when they're working out, they try to keep themselves distracted. You know, they watch television maybe in the gym, or they listen to music with their earbuds in. You're not such a fan of that. Why?
I'm not. I don't mind it at the gym. I think gyms can be quite sterile places. So if you're on a treadmill or you're on a stationary bike, you know, it might be fantastic to listen to a podcast or some stimulating music. But what I'm suggesting in the book, partly inspired by Charles Darwin, is that when you go for a walk or a run, you might want to actually engage your senses and allow the reverie that arises when you walk and run to be engaged with the stimulating world at a human pace. Because a lot of the time, we're speeding around our neighborhoods or around the city behind glass, you know, at 55 miles an hour. We're not engaging with our world. Stop take the time, see what's around you. You'd be surprised what you find.
We're talking with Damon Young. He's a philosopher and author of How to Think About Exercise. It's a new volume from the smartest self-help series / most accessible philosophy series I've yet come across, The School of Life. Damon, who's this book for, though? I can imagine the soft intellectuals and armchair philosophers, because it doesn't really seem like the kind of thing you'd find in the stack of, you know, Shape magazine or Men's Health magazines at Gold's Gym.
Okay, I think there are a few audiences for this. The first are people who have defined themselves against the body, against fitness, against exercise, because they see these things as kind of annexed by jocks, by thugs. And so they're alienated from the fitness industry and often from their own bodies. Then there's another group of people who do go to the gym, who are interesting, curious, you know, bookish people. They have a rich intellectual life. But when they go to the gym, they switch their minds off. Now, for some people, this is fantastic. They've used their brain all day. They don't want to do it anymore. But there are a lot of people who give up at the gym, partly out of the banality of it all. Mm-hmm. These are people who want mental stimulation. They crave good conversation. They're interested in rich ideas and impressions. But when they go to the gym, that all stops. So what I'm suggesting is they need to remind themselves that there is the sublime in swimming. There is aesthetic richness in doing weights. There is pride in sprinting and reverie in running and so on. Then I think there's one last group. And these are the people who are outstanding athletes who are looking to broaden their intellectual life. These are the Chads from Burn After Reading of the World, who everyone's just said, man, you are so buff, you are swole, man. But what about their ideas about art or music or ethics? So these people need to be given the chance to enrich their minds.
So for all of those people who profess to want to exercise but complain that they just don't have the time, maybe they are making intellectual pursuits, do you think that's a legitimate argument?
It's certainly true that it is difficult to find the time, you know, if you work, particularly if you have children or you're studying. The first thing is to realize that physical striving is no less important than having a job. You are a body. You live through your body. Why not engage it thoughtfully? But secondly, you don't have to go to the gym. I know that if I had to go to the gym to work out, I would not work out. This is partly because gyms are expensive, but it's also because I know I'd have to stop what I'm doing, get in the car, drive to some place, change my uniform, engage in banter with people I may not like, and so on. I'm revealing a little bit more about my personality here. A lot of my exercises are solitary. You'll pick that up in the book. So a lot of the exercise I do is from home. I run around my own neighborhood. I do chin-ups and push-ups in my own home. I have kettlebells in the garage. So what I've done is I've integrated exercise into my daily routines. So it doesn't have to be something special. It's just something I do. Another way is to see obstacles as opportunities. Now, I know that sounds like a horrible self-help tagline. You've not failed. You've just missed a chance for greatness. That's not what I'm saying. What I'm suggesting is, take the stairs in buildings and railways. It may be exhausting at first, but you'll feel awesome afterwards. If you're taking public transport, stop a couple of stops before when you get off, and then walk the rest of the way.
Well, Damon, if we reround the clock, you know, just a week or so ago, is there an exercise resolution that you would suggest to replace the more generic, I'm going to go to the gym 3 times a week, or, you know, I want to lose 15 pounds? What would be a better resolution?
My resolution would be exercise as a whole person rather than just a mechanical body. So if you want to see yourself enjoying exercise for the whole of your life rather than for the next 6 months, try to imagine those things that will keep you stimulated over the decades, not just the weeks. So that's not just going to be your personal best or sort of rock-hard Olympian abs, because you're probably not going to get those and it's fine to be realistic about that. Instead, what is going to stimulate your imagination? What is going to sharpen your intellect? What is going to give you a sense of pride? These are the things that keep people motivated over the years. Not necessarily whether they can get a movie star body.
Damon Young, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Damon Young is Honorary Fellow in Philosophy at the University of Melbourne. He's author of several books, including How to Think About Exercise, a book from the School of Life series. You'll find more on the book at wordofmouthradio.org. More word of mouth coming right after the break. Please stay with us.